The Guardian.
Hello, I'm Ollie Mann, and before we get going, I just wanted to point you in the direction of Squarespace, the easiest way for anyone to create an exceptional website. For your free 14-day trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com/guardian. And now, on with the show. Hey, don't you love that dispiriting feeling you get when you're turned away from a nightclub for being too short, too ugly, or too poor? Well, now you can get that feeling from the comfort of your own armchair, because there's a new breed of exclusive dating apps that have been dubbed the Tinder Illuminati. If you're super famous, disconcertingly attractive, or worth eye-watering sums of money, then you may just get to join. If you're none of these things, then you're stuck with the plebs on Tinder. Today we'll be taking a peek behind the velvet rope and talking to the social engineers behind it all. Swipe left, swipe right, see if I care. This is Tech Weekly from The Guardian. So, if you've ever wanted to date Moby, or Kelly Osbourne, or even the son of Arnold Schwarzenegger, then bad luck, because they're all on a secretive celebrity dating app called Raya, and you're not, and never will be. In fact, if you went to the wrong school, and you don't earn enough money, or you aren't attractive enough, then there are a whole host of dating apps out there that aren't for you. Joining me to discuss this is Michael Krayenhoff from The Inner Circle, and dating guru Charlie Lester. So what is the current state of dating at the moment? Because we're going to talk about some quite niche apps, but really, you know, is it Match.com? Is it Tinder? What's the big thing?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head just by saying niche, actually. So there are more general sites, Match.com, eHarmony, Lovestruck, the big names that have been around for some time, Guardian, Soulmates. But increasingly, there are more and more niche websites and apps targeted at smaller groups. So you've got apps like Bristler for people with beards, or Veggie Vision for vegetarians.
Okay, and as a share of the market, because they get a lot of column inches, don't they? Are these anywhere close to the big guys?
I think combined they are. I think they're taking a lot of business away from those big guys, because essentially what they do is they add an initial filter. So rather than you having to go onto Match.com and check that you're looking for someone who's vegetarian or Christian or, you know, has a certain colour hair, you can actually go to a website where all the people on that site already tick that box.
Are there any niches that have yet to be explored?
Probably, though I do think, especially in America, there are some very obscure niches that already exist.
Well, let's talk about some of those, because we're going to focus on exclusive apps. So let's run through some of those. Raya is the one that's populated by a lot of minor American TV stars we've never heard of, and Arnold Schwarzenegger's son. It's a bit like the Velvet Rope, but in tech form, isn't it? Tell us about that.
I kind of see that almost as like the Soho House of dating apps, because you have to you have to get recommended by two existing members, and you have to be friends with them on social media. Your Instagram account has to be checked and verified. It's a bit like that, the whole blue tick on Facebook or Twitter that denotes that you're a celebrity. Basically, if you don't already have a blue tick on those social media forms, there's no point in you even trying to get onto this dating app.
So it's worked on the basis that if essentially you're famous or renowned in your industry, you only want to meet other people that are. That in itself seems to me like a niche of famous people.
Yeah, no, I think that's true. I think it's an interesting one, because you can see why, if someone is quite high profile, they might not want to be seen on a dating site or a dating app which everyone can get onto, you know, for fear of just being constantly spammed and, you know, taken advantage of potentially. So I can see the reason behind it. I don't know whether there are enough people in the world to warrant that app and to make it to get to a critical mass where they can actually go on reasonable dates.
And then there's Luxie, which is the millionaire dating site, which describes itself as Tinder minus the poor people.
Oh, it's horrendous. Sorry. I mean, I love the dating industry, and I do a lot to try and raise the profile of the dating industry. But I think apps like that just are awful. I think anything that's to do with your income, and it just seems a bit money grabbing and gold digging.
So you need to be earning a minimum of 200 grand a year to join, don't you?
To be honest, I don't know a great deal about Luxie. It's not really an app I've concentrated too much on.
Well, it sounds very romantic. Their users are verified via their tax returns. Michael, your app is exclusive as well in a different way, not quite as ruthless as that. And we'll talk about your app in just a moment. But what is the gap in the market that all of these kinds of relatively niche, relatively exclusive apps are filling?
Well, back in the days, online dating was fairly small, and a small group of people was on these websites. And then around 2011, there came some very popular dating apps like Tinder, and they made the young professionals more open towards online dating. So where it was first really frowned upon, they really broken up the stigma and it became basically everybody is on a dating app.
And was that the technology or was that the generation shift or both together?
I think the technology made it very easy and fun to be on it, whereas on the traditional dating websites, it was a very formal process. You spent about an hour answering lots of different questions. And then with the new apps, it was like a game. You connect your Facebook, you swipe left, you swipe right, and it's a fun game. And in that way, people were like, oh, wait, like I go on it as a joke. And then the joke became a bit more serious.
And then the joke becomes your marriage. Yeah. So, I mean, with the mobile apps, actually, do you agree, Charlie, that it's also the fact that you are mobile. I guess it's more acceptable to be seen sort of on the tube or on the train or on the bus, sort of swiping left, swiping right. People don't know what you're doing. It's not the same as sitting in front of a desktop computer and filling out a lengthy questionnaire.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that that ease of sign up that Michael mentioned is really vital. If you look at the way that people sign up to Tinder, it's free and it literally takes seconds because it links to your Facebook account. And so people will go on it and test it and people will trial it. And it's gamified dating. It's made it feel like a game. It's made it feel like something where you grab your friend's phone and even if you're not single, you can go on your friend's Tinder and maybe find them a date. And I think it's just brought online dating really into the vernacular so that people aren't worried about it anymore. And they, you know, there used to be this horrible stigma around it and people would be embarrassed to say they met someone online. Whereas nowadays, it's really common to say you're going on a Tinder date. People will leave the office and happily admit they're going on a Tinder date.
Okay, in just a moment, I'm going to speak to Amanda Bradford, who is the founder of the dating app The League. She managed to raise $2.1 million from investments after just 2 months. Michael, is that why we've seen a lot of dating apps appear in the last few years? There's a bit of a gold rush.
There may be a bit of a gold rush for many apps that there is fairly easy capital to start off a business. With the Inner Circle, we have actually never raised a penny of money. So we grew from bootstrapped. We basically launched the product. We tested it. Our members reacted greatly. Then we were like, well, if they like it so much, we can add some premium features. Our members love the premium features. And in that way, they helped us finance our growth.
I think one of the things that the new guys in inverted commas like the Inner Circle have done is they've really raised the bar for the older sites because they've come in with this brand new tech and their whole sites and apps are built on new tech. Whereas a lot of the older sites, they've still got tech that's 10, 15 years old, so they're almost having to chase to catch up. So the newer sites can offer a lot more features and be a lot more user-friendly.
Okay, well, Michael will tell me all about the Inner Circle and why I probably can't get access to it next. Plus, I'll be speaking to Amanda Byford from the dating app The League, who will tell me why I'm out of mine.
If you've got a mobile business, you need an easy way to take multiple payment types with one integration. With Braintree, you can start accepting PayPal, Apple Pay, credit and debit cards, and more. Braintree also has quick, knowledgeable developer support, so there's help whenever you need it. The Braintree V.0 SDK. One snippet of code and you're all set up and ready to start taking payments from customers around the world. To find out more and for your first £30,000 in transactions fee-free, go to braintreepayments.com/techweekly.
So, you've decided Tinder is full of frogs and your prince doesn't seem to be coming any day soon. But you've heard of a dating app populated exclusively by the rich, the well-educated, the impossibly attractive. How can you mix in such exalted company? Well, let's ask Amanda Bradford, founder of dating app The League, who's on the phone now. Amanda, your tagline is, you don't need a dating app to get a date. You're too popular as it is. Is that a good selling point?
Well, we're really targeting the busy young professionals. So, you know, we're not targeting people that want to swipe endlessly on hundreds, even thousands of profiles. You know, we send 5 profiles a day. They're highly targeted for what that user has set as their preferences. And the idea is, you know, quality over quantity. These are people that you'd actually want to meet in person.
But it's not just about that, is it? Your app differs from other apps as well, as I alluded to in the introduction, in terms of exclusivity. Talk me through that.
We mimic college admissions models, so we make everybody apply with both their Facebook and their LinkedIn credentials. We put everybody on a wait list, and then we have a screening algorithm that consists of both actual algorithm that looks through the data that we collect, and then we actually have a human component as well. And the idea is we want a community full of diverse set of members that kind of embody what we call classy dating. So we make sure that, you know, their profile doesn't have anything disrespectful on it or any lewd photos. We really make sure that, you know, the entire community feels very respectful and high quality and classy. And this is, you know, not for one night stands. This is actually for dating.
Okay, so I get it. If you went to an Ivy League university and now you work for Goldman Sachs, you know, chances are you're going to be accepted. What if you are only ticking the box on either of those? You know, you went to a great college, but then, you know, you got a job working in a charity sector, or you didn't go to college at all, and now you've got loads of money. What does your algorithm do with that?
It's really not about income for us. It's about, you know, we do weigh profession and education pretty heavily in the algorithm, but we also look at, you know, plenty of other things. Because we have the LinkedIn profile, we can see what groups they're part of, what nonprofits they support, what, you know, what other articles they may have written. And so we really kind of look to just bring in interesting, high caliber people. So it's less about if they went to Harvard or Oxford, you know, although that is something, you know, I won't deny that that's something that we do weigh. I do believe that that is a proxy for kind of ambition and intelligence, but I don't think it's the only proxy. So, you know, there's some people that go to great boarding schools to get into Oxford and Harvard, but there's also people, you know, like myself that, you know, maybe just went to kind of a regular secondary school and just worked really hard, got good grades. So we kind of really try to just screen for ambition and, you know, kind of intelligence, passion. That's sort of the traits, and less about, you know, income necessarily.
Okay, so if you were going to pick one of those words, ambition, intelligence, passion, it's interesting. I mean, if it's not wealth that your clients are looking for, what do you think it is they're actually, in a word, looking for?
It's ambition. So, I mean, I think, you know, especially I'm from Silicon Valley, I would say me and most of my friends who start companies are pretty poor. So we, you know, we don't have a lot of income. We're not flying around jet setting, but, you know, we connect on things like drive. We want to build big companies. We want to change the world. And I think it's that thought process and that sort of desire. And so we have a lot of, you know, we have a lot of people that maybe have started nonprofits or even are working in charities, and they're not making six-figure salaries, but they are, you know, really trying to make an impact. And so I think we try to look for that. And so we don't just have a bunch of bankers and hedge fund people, although we do have them in the community. I won't say we don't, but we do try to balance them with creatives and people that are writers and people that, you know, are trying to make movies.
But, I mean, we're in a world where increasingly people are defined by what they do for a living. I mean, particularly in your country, in the USA, you know, it's almost the first question anyone asks you when you meet is, what do you do for a job?
So some of us are spending 80 hours a week there, so I definitely agree with you. I think it's, you know, it's almost as relevant, if not more, than where you went to school or where you grew up.
And so you don't have any concerns about people meeting because they do similar jobs, that being the primary factor?
No, I think that, you know, I think that's a high likelihood. So, I mean, we've even seen the data in our matching data. Doctors tend to match with doctors, and lawyers tend to match with lawyers, and people do have a lot of common interests and things they can talk about when people share a similar industry. So, I don't think that's a bad thing by any means.
And, I mean, the idea is obviously working. You're not short of applicants. You have a waiting list of 100,000 people. I know you're going to tell me that you always knew it was so, but you couldn't have, really. You must have had doubts when you launched it. I mean, it's impressive that you've got this long waiting list of people who want to do this.
Well, I really designed it for myself, and I kind of said, look, if nobody else wants it, you know, maybe this can just be a small community in San Francisco. And, you know, the concept really resonated with a lot of career-oriented, ambitious males and females. I was actually surprised at the number of, you know, both guys and girls that are really looking for someone that is an equal. And I think that kind of philosophy really resonated with a lot of career-oriented professionals out there. So I was actually really, really excited because I was like, oh, it's not just me. So.
And did you find a partner using your own app?
Well, I did. I dated someone I met from the league for about a year. So we have gone our separate ways at this point, but I still consider that a pretty good success story.
Are they still on your app?
I don't know. I don't ask, but I tell him if he's going to use an app, he should use mine. So.
Well, that really is viral marketing.
Yeah.
Now, you're launching in Europe soon. When and what do you think the differences are between this territory and the USA? I mean, obviously, there are some comparisons between New York and London, but beyond that, they're very different markets, aren't they?
Yeah, I was actually just in London, and I noticed that, you know, it seems that people don't mingle as much when they go out, and there's not quite as much random conversation that's striked up. So I actually
that's good old-fashioned English reserve, Amanda. It's very important. It's how we won the war.
Well, I started talking to someone next to me, and my friend is English, and she looked shocked. Struck up a conversation with a guy. So I do think that the kind of dating app concept should be a really good fit with, you know, young London, upwardly mobile young professionals.
Well, all the best with it, Amanda. If I find myself single, then I hope that this has fast-tracked me through to an approval.
Yes, you know someone now on the inside, so I can make sure you're expedited.
Well, that's how it works, is it? It's all nepotism after all that. So much for algorithms. Amanda, thanks very much for joining us.
Okay, great. Thanks so much.
So still in the studio, we have Michael Krayenhoff from the Inner Circle. Michael, we've just heard from Amanda from the League. Yours is a similar idea in that you use LinkedIn to match people professionally.
Our members can connect in two ways onto the Inner Circle, and that's via their Facebook and their LinkedIn. In the end, our goal is to create a close network of like-minded people, and the platform is more of a social network-style dating website in order to stimulate genuine connections between people. So we want people to have genuine conversations with like-minded people.
Interesting use of the word genuine. I mean, what is a disingenuous conversation that people are having on other dating apps, do you think?
A lot of dating apps, they don't really give people reasons to ask a genuine question. So they swipe through and they see, oh, this is a really hot girl. And they say, hey, you look really pretty. Do you want to go on a date? Whereas we provide a lot more background information about people, like where are they going on holiday? Where did they go on holiday? What are their favorite bars, clubs and speakeasies around town? So say you and I like going to the same speakeasy bar, which provides a really good reason for like, hey, I see you always go to the same bar. I've never seen you there, blah, blah, blah. And eventually it results in a more genuine conversation. You probably have some friends in common who also enjoy going to the same place. And that creates a better starting point for a relationship than just, hey, you look hot.
Okay. I love the idea that I might even be able to generate a list of my top five speakeasies. But a lot of people do want to do that. You've had 130,000 people on your waiting list.
Yeah.
Why? Is that a bit like when you wait outside the club and they pretend that it's busier inside than it actually is? So you get this sense of exclusivity.
I guess a lot of people like to interpret it as that our exclusivity is a means to an end, but the goal is to create a close network of like-minded people, and that's what makes the whole dating effective for our members.
I mean, Charlie, it seems to me the danger with sort of smaller and smaller niche groups of dating apps is that the pool becomes too small and there aren't enough people on them. I'm thinking here of my grandmother, who at the age of 80 signed up for J-Date and ended up getting matched with her own son. it's one of my favourite stories.
It's a brilliant story.
There is a danger of that, isn't there? Particularly, I guess, on these apps, if you are looking for a same-sex relationship, where the pool's going to be even smaller than that.
And I think that's the key. The key is finding the correct a niche that's wide enough that enough people are going to be interested in it, but still narrow enough that you feel like you're being selective and you're self-identifying to some degree by choosing that app or site. I think that there are going to be situations where your options are too small, and perhaps in that example, if you're looking for a same-sex relationship, go to an app that is specifically for same-sex relationships rather than a wider site where that's, you know, sort of a second thought.
And how do you choose who gets to be a member? Can I be a member?
Are you single?
No.
Then no.
You promise everyone on your site is single?
Well, we aim to have only singles on the website because in the end, we want to be a very effective tool to create real relationships between people in a busy career.
But how do you actually investigate that? Someone just has to tick a box saying they're single. How do you know they are or aren't?
So people, when they register, they connect their Facebook and or LinkedIn. So we receive a lot of data on that. And
be lying across multi-platforms if they are not telling the truth. Yeah.
Exactly. So the first part of the screening is focused on age. So we focus on the young professional, the person 25 to 40 years old, career-oriented, well-educated. So when there's a person, say, 50 or 60 years old signing up, then that person will definitely not become a member of the Inner Circle because we don't want, say, 60-year-old men and perving on 25-year-old girls. But we also don't want to be the cougar dating website where we have 25-year-old guys being chased by 60-year-old women.
Which presumably there is a niche for, Charlie.
There is. Toy Boy Warehouse exists. Yeah. and actually, I think a site called Cougar Dating.
Yes, okay. Well, one thing that is very impressive that you've managed to do is you actually, at one point last year, had to ban new women members because you had too many women. Now, that is something that seems extraordinary to me, that the idea that you might have more women than men on a dating app. Is that just old information that it's mostly men on these things?
Well, I think women are quite romantics, and as we created in a short amount of time a lot of couples. Women, they talk more about the success stories, which means they refer each other more to the website and we get more popularity from women. Whereas guys, they talk more in a guy's way about dating apps, which means success stories will spread less quick.
And you do live events as well, which again seems like quite a clever way to generate revenue. What kind of things do people turn up to?
We host a variety of events, from after work cocktails at speakeasy bars to bigger parties where we theme the venue and then have about 500 members. We've got bands, DJs, saxophonists, violins and the whole shebang to make it a really, really big and fun party. We don't let our events feel like a dating event. It's very important that it feels like a real fun party, almost like a birthday party where you'll maybe bump into some friends and everybody's there basically to celebrate and have a good time.
Do you think that's the future, Charlie? It sounds like a sort of old-fashioned dating site that brings people together in real life.
I think, to be honest, I think the Inner Circle is in quite a unique situation where they can run these really good events because what they essentially do is they make their events feel like a bar where everyone is single and you know that everyone also is like-minded and probably quite similar to you. Not all sites can do that. And I think it's interesting because in most situations, I would say that dating events are on their way out. That whole cringy speed dating thing, we're all over it. Like, no one likes those setups anymore. Whereas, I mean, I've gone to quite a few of the Inner Circle events and they are really fun because it's just a night out at the pub. Or a posh pub.
A posh pub. Okay, well, will services like the Inner Circle and the League still be here in 5 years' time? We'll do a bit of future gazing next.
Squarespace. This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace. If you want to build a website, you have many options. But if you want to build it beautiful, there's only one. Squarespace gives you the power of world-class design, so you can do more than create a website. You can set yourself apart. See why some of the world's most influential people, brands, and businesses choose Squarespace. To start your free trial, visit squarespace.com/guardian.
Welcome back. So do these exclusive dating apps have a long-term future? And what is the future for dating apps generally? Michael Krayenhoff from the Inner Circle and Charlie Lester are still with me. Let's talk about the CEO of Luxie. Do you know who that is, Charlie?
No. No, I don't.
And no one does. Do you know who it is, Michael?
No clue.
No. And the reason is, apparently, he presumably has kept his identity a secret. And that's partly because of the negative attention that exclusive apps can attract. Do you understand that, Charlie, and why that criticism exists?
Oh, definitely. And I think there are extremes. I mean, there was a site some years ago that was open called Beautiful People, and literally they ranked you. They rate you out of 10 and you only get in if you're a 9 or a 10. And you can see why people would react negatively to something like that. I think it takes a certain type of person to self-identify as a beautiful person and think of themselves as a 9 out of 10 anyway.
But then why not introduce them to each other?
They can, well, maybe just introduce them to a mirror.
And how important is it then, do you think, in the future that people start listing their education, their job, and all that kind of social information on their profiles? Because some people would say romance isn't about any of those things.
Romance isn't about those things, but again, it's about narrowing down that pool. And as that pool of options gets wider and wider, which is what internet and apps are doing for us, you do need to have that way of narrowing it down to people who you might have something more in common with. And realistically, even if you go to a speed dating event, those are probably the first questions that people ask. What do you do for a living? Where in London do you live? Where did you go to university if they're of a certain age? So I think those questions get asked anyway. You're just answering them up front.
And I mean, Michael, do you think there's a danger of this criticism having some validity, that basically you're being a snob?
Well, I think that misses the whole point of our goal, because the exclusivity is not there to be exclusive. It's just to bring together a group of like-minded people. So all our members are aged roughly 25 to 40 years old. They're well-educated. They're in the middle of their careers. They understand each other's lifestyles. And that is basically what makes it for them easy to hit it off and have a great time together.
Would it get to the stage where you'd consider vetting people physically as well as in terms of their background?
No.
Because I don't know if... Charlie, go ahead.
Don't you, to some degree? I thought you were a bit picky about what members look like.
We look at lots of things. So what I said, the most important thing is the age. And after that, we look at the education, the career and stuff. And the most important thing is that a person brings something to the table, whether they are in a really thriving career, or maybe if someone is a model, that's a completely different career. You know, she may not be well educated, but she may be in a kick-ass career and doing really well. So then that forms a really good reason for that person to get in.
So you don't look at what people look like?
Not really, no.
You do a bit.
There are quite a lot of hot people on your app.
Hot people who are kicking ass in life, I'd say.
fair enough. Charlie, this idea of sort of social cleansing, this is maybe something that I'm concerned about, or I'm thinking that listeners to this might be concerned about, because we're in 2016 and this is a relatively new thing. But in 5-10 years' time, just the same as there is no stigma now about using Tinder and Grindr, will there just be no stigma about it because there are lots of apps out there and it's a perfectly legitimate thing to do?
I think that would be the case. I mean, I think the reality is if you use the more general apps, everyone complains about the fact that when they go on Tinder, you just trawl through lots of rubbish and might find a gem in amongst the dirt, kind of. And I think that's the issue with a lot of the sites that have got so many people on there. There are so many people, it's really hard to find someone that you've got similarities with. And if those similarities are your profession or your wealth, and that's what's important to you, then why shouldn't you be able to find those people? Like we said, I mean, with something like Beautiful People, yes, that attracts narcissists, but you know, if you're that narcissistic that you want to go on that site, then maybe you'd be attracted to someone who's equally vain. You know, why not have pools for everyone?
All right, let's look into our crystal balls then. What do you think we're going to be looking at on the dating scene in 5 years' time? How will it have changed from now?
I think it's going to get more and more niche. I think that does seem to be the way that things are going. So with the awards that I run every year, the niche dating site category is the most oversubscribed category of our entries.
And niche dating apps, though, can't be oversubscribed themselves, can they? Because they, by necessity, have to be exclusive. Is there a limit on how many people you can have join your app, Michael, before it isn't exclusive anymore?
Well, there we come back to the foundation again of whether our means to the end is the exclusivity, but that is not. Our goal is to have a group of like-minded people, which results in a close network of people who are more likely to hit it off.
So you see that as a very large niche, potentially?
Fairly large. It's not a mass market that it's for everybody, and a lot of people will probably not feel attracted to it, but for our market, it seems to be working very well.
And what do you think your site will be, or your app will be in 5 years' time? Will you have an option for perhaps older people seeking younger and younger people seeking older as different separate apps?
At this moment, our focus is on the short term to grow in Europe and then grow in the US and the rest of the world. And the world is quite big, so I think we've got quite a long and big job ahead of us. But who knows, farther down the line, that we will start a similar concept for people in their Indian summer.
Well, maybe if I wait long enough, then I will be eligible to join. Thank you very much to both of you. Real pleasure. Thank you as well to Amanda Bradford for joining us down the line. I've been Ollie Mann. You can follow me on Twitter and Facebook, Ollie with a Y, MANN. This week's producer was Simon Barnard. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
The Guardian has always been a community of readers, journalists, and contributors. And now our live events are bringing these people together.
The Guardian events are The Guardian at its best, which is a two-way conversation involving the reader and having a real, genuine, thriving debate.
Could be anything from food and culture, arts, to politics, to foreign affairs.
To see what events are coming up and to check out the benefits of membership, go to members.theguardian.com. Also, subscribe to the Guardian Live podcast. You can do so on iTunes, SoundCloud, and other reputable audio platforms.
For more great downloads, go to theguardian.com/audio.